Well, we have been looking at Nehemiah, his story in the Old Testament. Go to Psalms, take a left, three books, and you'll find the book of Nehemiah. And it's a very exciting story. We've been with Nehemiah now for a number of weeks, and he has been in the process of building the walls and the gates to the city of Jerusalem. And we are just about at that point. Matter of fact, Nehemiah is so close to the finish, he can almost taste it. Even the folks working around him can, it's just right there, it's almost done. They know they're so very close to securing, to protecting their city. And there's probably excitement all over the place as the city's very close to the realization that they'll have a secure and protected city. It kind of reminds me of the Seahawks in the Super Bowl on the last drive. They were so close, but then who knows what can happen, and it didn't happen very well for the Seahawks, so we won't talk about it too long. But we'll see what happens to Nehemiah as he gets to very close to his goal here. One thing for sure, it's not done until it's done, and the goal is in sight. But even as pressure to finish is within Nehemiah and his group, the pressure to stop them is as strong as ever. The bad guys know they need to stop them now because it is almost complete. They know if they don't get them stopped, their world of controlling the region around Jerusalem and the whole area will be in jeopardy. So why is it a big deal to control the area? Basically, it's money and power. When I teach about the land of the Bible and the geography and history of the area, one of the things we like to track is the trade routes. The trade routes are central a lot to what we do, and that's why the country of Israel is right at a bridge between Europe, Asia, and Africa. So if you're carrying supplies and trading in commodities and products, you generally some way have to go through that land. And if you control the land, you can charge tariffs, taxes, you can tollways, if you will, on those travelers going through. And the same's rather true here, as the city of Jerusalem is a base to control a lot of the region. And these guys had that control. You could say, follow the money. Because in this case, it's one of the reasons that these guys are wanting to stay in control. If you were to look at the history of David and Solomon, where David actually took in a vast amount of territory and enlarged the kingdom of Israel, well, one of the benefits of that is he could charge tariffs for all those products moving around. And you see Solomon, as he took over the kingdom, he, I'm sure, continued to do that, and they became a very wealthy nation. He fortified cities along the trade routes, and you see that in history. But getting back to Jerusalem, so when we see bad people in positions of power and money, it's not necessarily unlawful to tax a people unless you do it with a heavy hand, unless you aren't fair in it. And a lot of times bad leaders will arrange systems. Not only do they charge extra taxes, but they also give lucrative contracts to their friends. That's nothing new. It goes on in this world today. But you see it there. One thing for sure, Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem are not going to give up without a fight. They try direct military fear and showing people that they were going to conquer them. They're going to, before they could even start building the wall, they're going to come and kill them. And we saw how that didn't work. And then they tried discouragement from the inside of those friendly to their cause, where they tried to just get people to be disgruntled. And that attempt failed too. So now we have another new strategy. At least at the very end, they're going to try something new. They go after Nehemiah himself. The only problem is that Nehemiah is God's man. He's on the job, and he comes equipped. He has great defensives and tools that God has given him. So I'm going to pick it up from Nehemiah chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. When the word came to Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, the Arab, and the rest of our enemies that I had rebuilt the wall, and not a gap was left on it, though up to that time I had not set the doors and the gates, Sanballat, Geshem, sent me this message, come, let us meet together in one of the villages on the plain of Ono. But they were not scheming to harm me. Excuse me, they were scheming to harm me. Man, those guys are unrelenting. Actually, just like Satan is with us. You can also see the project nearing completion, and the pressure is building on them. Sanballat from Samaria, Geshem, the Arab from the south, are trying to separate Nehemiah from the pack. They invite him to meet over a cup of coffee just to talk. But they want to talk a long ways from Jerusalem, on the plains of Ono, south and west of the city, along the coast, where really Nehemiah would have no support at all. He'd be so totally surrounded by the bad guys and their friends. Good reason not to drink coffee, I'd say. Nehemiah smells entrapment and danger. He discerns things that it's not going to be real kosher for him in this situation. You can see in this story that Nehemiah uses all his giftedness that God's given him. He uses wisdom, discernment, strength, integrity to really help him deal with what is being dished out towards him. So verses 3 and 4 of chapter 6 read this. So I sent messengers to them with this reply. I am carrying on a great project and I cannot go down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and go down to you? Four times they sent me the same message, and each time I gave them the same answer. Notice Nehemiah's wisdom and how he responds back to them. He says, I have a great project going here, and it needs me to stay focused. Why should I come down to you? Leaving the opening that if they want to come visit him in Jerusalem, they could talk. What's wrong with them coming up there? What he's really doing is smoking them out to see their intent clearly. Four times they send the same message. And for us, Satan will constantly go after you over and over again. Are you ready to handle it? Do you have a plan to deal with it? Have you made the decisions what you're going to do when you're tempted and things come at you? Are you able to spot the dangers like Nehemiah did? I like how Nehemiah just matched their efforts. Four of the same invites, four of the same responses. Then we get to verse 5. Then, the fifth time, Sanballat sent his aides to me with the same message, and in his hand was an unsealed letter. Oh, here's a new strategy. An open letter. Those last four messages evidently came in sealed official diplomatic pouches, but at this point, they have an open letter. Why do you think they did that? Well, it's of course, so others could see the accusations. There was no internet in that day. There's no way to start a rumor, at least to make it appear like by accident. I'm sure it was an accident. So let's look and see what the letter says. Nehemiah chapter 6, verses 6 and 7, in which was written, it is reported among the nations, and Geshem says it is true, that you and the Jews are plotting to revolt, and therefore you are building the wall. Moreover, according to these reports, you are about to become their king, and have even appointed prophets to make this proclamation about you in Jerusalem. There is a king in Judah. Now, this report will get back to the king in Persia. So come, let us meet together. I like how they make a statement, a lie. And as proof of the lie, they say, well, Geshem says it's true. It's like going to the website www.tellalie.com is reporting something, and it must be true because it's on the web. Bad guys. Nehemiah, you are wanting to be king, and have even bribed some religious leaders to help you. You are just pursuing your own fame and fortune, knowing that Nehemiah has a personal relationship with the king of Persia. They actually look to try and cause trouble with that for Nehemiah. You could say the spin machine was well in place, spinning all they could to make Nehemiah look bad. We think of spinning to be mainly in politics and in the press, but as we all know, we tend to do it ourselves from time to time. We are one to spin ourselves. It's not my fault. It's your fault. It's anybody's fault. It's just not me. It's the neighbor. Actually, we could go on talking about this a lot, but we'll move on before it gets too personal here. They were hoping to frighten and discourage Nehemiah with blatant lies. They were threatening to tell the king. One thing they did not take into account is how they could tell the king lies about Nehemiah. But you see, Nehemiah had a personal relationship with the king. He had been a close servant for a number of years and would know the claim against Nehemiah was a lie. Sanballat and his co-conspirators are Satan's tools to disrupt the fortifications of Jerusalem. It made me think of the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Peter. And I wanted to grab a verse from the New Testament and give it to Nehemiah. It simply reads 1 Peter 5:8 from the NLT says, "Stay alert. Watch out for your great enemy, the devil. He prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour." Be good words for Nehemiah. Nehemiah responds directly, I hope, with an open letter back. It's just my thinking. He's not intimidated at all and is not going to be threatened or afraid because of their lies, their untruths, and their spin. He says, no way. That's not happening. You made it all up. It's totally untrue. And frankly, it's only in your sick minds. Listen to how it reads. Verses 8 and 9. I sent him this reply. Nothing like what you are saying is happening. You are just making it up out of your head. They were all trying to frighten us, thinking their hands will get too weak for the work and it will not be completed. But I prayed, now strengthen my hands. Of course, what does Nehemiah do when these things happen? He does what he always does. He prays. He asks for strength. With 95% of the walls and gates in place, he has to be totally exhausted by this point. Now, the bad guys aren't done yet. They have one more sneaky thing to try before it's finished. They still want to separate him out of the pack. And it hasn't worked. None of their plans have worked at this point. The rumors haven't worked. The lies haven't worked. But their last plan. Let's get a credible friend of his to help. So Nehemiah 6, verses 10 through 13. One day I went to the house of Shemaiah, son of Deliah, the son of Mehetabel, who was shut in at his home. He said, let us meet in the house of God, inside the temple. And let us close the temple doors, because men are coming to kill you. By night, they're going to come and kill you. But I said, should a man like me run away? Or should someone like me go into the temple to save his life? I will not go. I realized that God had not sent him, but that he had prophesied against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. He had been hired to intimidate me, so that I would commit a sin by doing this. And then they would give me a bad name to discredit me. So how about that? A respected, quote, good friend. One who's actually a spiritual leader. One of his religious friends from the church. Then he says to Nehemiah, come join me, they're going to kill you. Let's hide out in the temple. Matter of fact, we can go in the Holy of Holies to make sure you're safe. One thing the so-called friend forgot, Nehemiah has a very strong fear of God. He would no sooner go into a place that is reserved only for priests than he would jump off a cliff. He fears God. Matter of fact, he fears God more than anything itself. Like we need to fear God. Of course, again, we see Nehemiah praying about it. It's what he does. Verse 14. Remember Tobiah and Sanballat, my God, because of what they have done. Remember also the prophet Noadiah and how she and the rest of the prophets have been trying to intimidate me. It's interesting to note how Nehemiah wants to deal with a woman who has been harming him. I mean, it's like out of the blue. He just mentions her here. She's obviously someone on the inside, someone that's leading a pack of disgruntled religious leaders. We don't know anything about her, but she must have had an effect because he looks, sounds rather ticked. Nehemiah, verses 15 and 16. So the wall was completed in the 25th of Elul in 52 days. That's, by the way, how we figured out when he started. When all of our enemies heard about this, all the surrounding nations were afraid and lost their self-confidence because they realized that this work had been done with the help of our God. The wall is done, the gates are in place, and the city is secure. Let the party begin. But it isn't a party just to celebrate what the team has done. It's a party to celebrate what God has done. And look how the surrounding nations took it. They're blown away because they could see God all over it. It would not have been accomplished by human efforts alone. Only God can make this happen. Look at your life. Can you see God's hand on it? Can you see where you kept your hand in control and paid the price? I sure have. And frankly, I'd rather not look back too often. It's painful. Just like the people of Israel in the Old Testament in their early years experience, when they took charge and ignored God's will, they paid a price for those times. And when they followed God's ways and his commands, they were blessed. Life tended to be better for them when they pursued God. And so it is with us. God is like a good parent. We see it in the story of Israel and also in our lives. He tries to educate us, to help us make good choices. Look what God said to Israel after their walk in the desert for 40 years. This is in Joshua chapter 1, verse 5. He says to them, "No one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you." What a great promise to hang on to. God is with you, and he will be with you. He will never forsake you. You can take that one to the bank. That is God talking directly to you. Take confidence in that promise. God, by his very nature, is a man of his word, and he put it in his word just for you. When times are rough and challenging, he will be there, even if those times are good, if you let him. It is sad how sometimes during good times we tend to draw away because we kind of don't need God. So, the wall's finished. Isn't that exciting? And you might think, well, the book of Nehemiah is finished. He completed the task. The story ends here. No, it's not. It's not done at all. We're only halfway through the book. Look at the next three verses and see how the drama continues. Nehemiah 6, 17 through 19. "Also in those days, the nobles of Judah were sending many letters to Tobiah, and replies from Tobiah kept coming to them. For many in Judah were under oath to him." Isn't that interesting? "Since he was a son-in-law to Shechaniah, son of Ariah, and son Jehanan, who had married the daughter of Meshullam, son of Barakah. Moreover, they kept reporting to me his, Tobiah's, good deeds, and then telling him what I said. And Tobiah sent letters to intimidate me." Does Tobiah never quit? Do the bad guys ever slow down? "Tobiah, the governor of the east, will continue to be a thorn in Nehemiah's side for a while. He has connections everywhere. Family, friends, hired informants, spies. It seems like it is never ending. We should be reminded that we are not free of this world. Until the Lord brings us home, Satan continues to be alive and well. Nehemiah is reminded that even though he has finished the wall, work is not done. God still has a work to do with the hearts of his people then and our hearts today, because we are his people. He is the good parent who looks to protect us, strengthen us, and help us to be on guard. He will pursue us endlessly because he loves us. He loves us yesterday. He loves us today. And he loves us tomorrow and into eternity. You don't want to miss these coming weeks. We'll see what God has in store for the people in Nehemiah's day. He wants them to live full and healthy lives. So let us celebrate today this completion of the wall. But mostly let us give thanks for the gracious God who loves us and looks to make us complete. Join me while I pray. Father, we are so constantly encourage in this study of Nehemiah to know you are alongside. You love us, you care for us. You don't hide the fact that Satan is alive and well and he is coming at us. But you are quick to remind us that all through your history, you have been alongside your chosen ones. Lord, you have been alongside your people. We recognize your sovereignty. We recognize your strength in our lives, and we need that strength. Lord, if someone is not aware of how deep you love them, I pray that you let them, give them the courage to make it known, that we can come alongside and help them have that walk with you, that we can come alongside them and help them know what it means to accept you, to confess their sins, to come clean with you, and to make an honest decision to walk with you. Lord, it's a gradual process. We're thankful of that. I don't know if we could handle it all at once, but you are gracious. You understand who we are and what we need. Thank you for this study in chapter 6 of Nehemiah. May it be an example for us to follow as we look to find our strength in you. In Jesus' name, amen.